As editor of Haiti Liberté, you published U.S. diplomatic cables on Haiti in collaboration with WikiLeaks, and one of the topics was the U.S.-led actions to keep Jean-Bertrand Aristide out of Haiti by the U.S. and also with countries including Canada and France. Why do these countries want to keep Aristide out of Haiti?
Well, if you look at the U.S. Destabilization campaigns in Latin America over the past decades, it's mostly been not against communists or socialists, but really against anybody who has a nationalist program. And that's essentially what Aristide had. That was the essence of the Lavalas movement in his February 7th, 1991, first inauguration. Aristide called it Haiti's second independence, referring to Haiti's really neo-colonial status up until that point. And that was really the beginning of the wars against Aristide. I say wars because there was first one in 1991 to 94, and then again when he returned to power in 2001. And essentially, the U.S. has been fighting that Lavalas movement since its birth, shortly after the departure of former president for life, Jean-Claude Duvalier, on February 7th, 1986. And so really we can say for these past 25 years, it's been a battle between that democratic nationalist movement of the Lavalas, headed by former President Jean-Bertrand Aristide, and Washington.
And has foreign intervention been successful in repressing popular support for Aristide and Lavalas?
Not repressing the support. Repressing the people, yes. They've have successfully carried out two coups d'etats in 91 and 2004, but the people keep coming back. I mean, Lavalas means flood. It's like water, and water has so many forms. Sometimes it can wash away an obstacle, sometimes it goes under an obstacle, sometimes it goes around it, it goes over it. So it's a movement which keeps its resistance. It takes different forms. It's found different ways to counter Washington's war against it. What Peter Hallward called in his 2007 book, Trying to Dam the Flood.
The cables were from the period 2003 to 2010. What did they say about what U.S. and other foreign governments had done in terms of interfering economically in Haiti during that period?
Well, perhaps the most concrete response would be the Petrocaribe episode, where the U.S. government basically fronted for the two largest U.S. Oil companies, that's Texaco Chevron and ExxonMobil. And those two companies were dead set against a deal that the Haitian state made with the Venezuelan state called the Petrocaribe. And what that essentially provided to Haiti was all of its energy needs, about 17,000 barrels of oil a day. And this was at extremely preferential costs. And all that Haiti had to pay was 60% upfront, and the remaining 40% could be financed over 25 years at 1% interest. This saved the Haitian state $100 million a year, and a tremendous savings. And the U.S. government fought tooth and nail to undo this. Very favorable. They themselves recognized that it was very favorable to the Haitian economy. And thanks really to that deal, which finally did go through, and we trace the battle in our first installment of the WikiLeaks series, we trace the battle between former President René Préval's government and that of Washington. So That was one, but we can say across the board, you see in the course of the cables a battle for a neoliberal regime in Haiti. Call for privatization is often seen in the pages of the cables. This was really the, I could say, hallmark of U.S. policy. Haiti, when Duvalier stepped down in 86, had 9 state enterprises. These ranged from the airport, electricity company, telephone company, to a flour mill, to a cement factory, to an essential oils plant. And over the course of these past 25 years of this battle, they've been trying to privatize these, and they've succeeded in privatizing most of them. Only the airport remains, I think, in state hands, and technically so does the electric company, even though that's being portioned off. But all the other state industries have, at this point, been successfully privatized.
And one of the criticisms since the 2010 earthquake is that a lot of the money that's going to Haiti, it's not going to the Haitian government. It is going, my understanding is, mostly to, you know, private companies or to foreign NGOs to distribute it. And what impact has that had?
Right. Well, the impact is to create tremendous resentment, frustration, anger among the Haitian people. The intermediaries are the ones who are getting the money. It's already not very much money. It should be more. I mean, we're talking about $5 million over the course of 3 years. About half of that has been delivered, or it's really hard to know where it is because you have what they call dispersing the monies and then spending the money, and you never know where it is really in that pipeline. But the fact of the matter is, about 99% of all the aid money ends up going either to the U.S. State Department, the Defense Department, the contractors, or to the NGOs, and only 1% to the people, which is an outrage when you consider that really for any real meaningful change to happen, it needs to go to the people, or at least to the government of the country. And essentially, since the 1990s, the policy of the U.S. has been to marginalize the Haitian government, what they call good governance. And they try to funnel money directly to NGOs. This is even prior to the earthquake. Directly to the NGOs, and thereby undercut the strength of the state. This is precisely to prevent and forestall any Aristide-like phenomenons where you would have a strong state come in. This is, they want it going directly to their NGOs, which is the non-governmental organizations, one of the greatest misnomers of history. These are quintessentially governmental organizations, basically tentacles of the U.S. government.
And have Haitians been able to participate in any of these organizations in determining what priorities are for the country?
No, on the contrary, this really what was brought into stark relief by the earthquake was that the Haitian people were being marginalized in their own salvation. They couldn't get into the meetings at the log base, as they call the big base where all the NGOs and UN agencies coordinating the relief. They couldn't get in. You if you were a foreigner, you could walk right in the door. You looked right at home. But if you were a Haitian, forget about it. You know, you would start to get your ID papers checked outside. I give the story of a camp, the largest IDP camp, internally displaced persons camp, in Port-au-Prince, and in fact in Haiti, the Jean-Marie Vincent camp, which was based on the old aviation field in downtown Port-au-Prince. And there were two camps of, when they say camps, sometimes they're divided into sort of sub-camps, and there were two. which were headed by women's groups who were trying to get into the log base to talk to them. And they couldn't get in. They sent emissaries. They even had a couple of American or and Haitian American young people who they sent down who were able to get in, but because they spoke English and so forth. They couldn't negotiate an entrance. Finally, they staged a demonstration in front of the log camp. So basically, the people, the Haitian people, are accessory at best, and in most cases, just the object of planning, which is carried out without their participation and without their input.
One of the fairly significant acts of protest by the Haitian people that was reported a lot here was Haitian farmers who burned seeds that were, you know, allegedly donated or dumped by Monsanto, and the attention that it drew to the threats for farmers and for agriculture and food security of having foreign seeds and GMOs dumped in your country. Have farmers been able to successfully resist foreign intervention?
So far, yes. The action that you're speaking about, where 10,000 farmers up on the Central Plateau, which are organized around a group up there called the Papai Peasants Movement, that has been one of the longest standing peasant movements in the country. Even though politically they've sometimes been a little confused in their allegiances, making alliances with some of the coup-making members of the bourgeoisie. But nonetheless, when Monsanto came in with these seeds, which require you to buy new seeds the following year, you can't, you know, they can pollute the whole seed supply. The peasants said, we want none of that, and they indeed did burn it. So really, the peasantry has been, to this current wave of occupation, as they were to the first wave of occupation from 1915 to 1934, when U.S. Marines governed the country. It was the peasantry which was the principal base of resistance. That's where Charlemagne Peralt, who was Haiti's sort of Sandino or Farabundo Marti, if you will. That's where he was based, up on that central plateau, the very same place we see where these peasants burned the seeds of Monsanto.
And have there been other significant acts of citizen resistance against foreign governments or the UN occupying forces?
Oh, my word, yes. The every week, and that's what we chronicle in Haiti Liberté, we are in many ways the journal of the resistance. You have usually demonstrations and against the occupation, against the importation of cholera by UN Nepalese troops back in October 2010, against the IHRC, what they call the Interim Haiti Recovery Commission, which was headed by Jean-Max Bellerive and President Bill Clinton, former President Bill Clinton. That has since expired, but there were a number of demonstrations against it. No, the Haitian people are quick to take to the streets and have been very vociferous and active in their opposition to the takeover, or increased takeover, I should say, of the Haitian state by the foreign alliance, I could say, led by Bill Clinton.
What do you recommend for people here in Canada if they want to protest what our government is doing in Haiti, or their actions, solidarity actions that people here can take?
Well, interestingly, Canada really has the most organized Haiti solidarity movement in North America, much more than in the U.S. The Canada-Haiti Action Network, known as CHAN. I'm a guest here of Ralph Paul, who is one of the leaders here in Winnipeg. This is really one of the most effective networks in North America, in the world, I could say. Their website is second to none in terms of delivering updates and news on Haiti. So really connecting with that CHAN network and with those Haiti solidarity groups here in Winnipeg, in all across Canada, is really important.
All right. Well, thanks for coming to Winnipeg, and thanks for coming to the station.
Thank you.